So, you have a Halloween sequel for me?
Yes, sir, I do.
So, you remember in the last movie how Laurie Strode shot two of Michael Myers' fingers off and stabbed him and left him for dead in a house fire?
I do, yeah.
So, at the beginning of this movie, Laurie's gonna see some firefighters on their way to the fire and be like, oh, dang it, no.
She didn't account for the existence of firefighters when she planned a house fire?
She didn't, no. So, then Michael's gonna kill like 10 firefighters.
A bunch of firefighters in great physical condition get taken out by an 8-fingered 60-year-old with smoke inhalation?
That's what we're going with. Because first of all, they each take turns attacking him, and second of all, Michael's now surprisingly good at martial arts.
Oh, maybe it's one of those house fires you keep hearing about that are very, you know, educational karate-wise. I might have just made that up.
Maybe. So then at the hospital, Laurie has emergency surgery because Michael had stabbed her as well.
Oh, that's right.
And then you're gonna like this. She's gonna spend the rest of the movie in a hospital bed, barely having anything to do with anything.
Aren't we billing Jamie Lee Curtis as the star of this movie? Feels like she should do something.
Well, actually, at a certain point, she is gonna get out of bed, but then she's gonna be like, ouch, my stitches, and she's gonna go back to bed.
That works.
So then we're gonna go to a local bar and meet some characters that are having, like, a Halloween talent show.
Well, this is still the same night as the last movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about an 18-hour night, I'd say. So this guy Tommy Doyle gets on stage, and he's actually the kid that Laurie was babysitting in the 1978 movie.
So what's his talent? Ruining everybody's fun.
Oh, it is. Yeah, he goes on stage, and he's like, I'm not doing any talent thing. I just want to remind everyone that there were murders that happened 40 years ago.
Oh yeah, that guy's a real buzzkill.
He is. And then on the bar TV, they're gonna see that Michael Myers and this other guy escape from a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, so they see his face?
They do, yeah. We don't see it because it's blurred to us, but they do.
Oh.
So Tommy Doyle decides he's gonna get a mob together and go kill Michael.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he says Michael's been terrorizing this town for 40 years, so evil dies tonight.
Hasn't Michael been locked up for 40 years after killing 3 people in the late 70s? Yeah, just terrorizing the town.
So Tommy's like, evil dies tonight.
Yeah, he already said that.
Oh yeah, no, I know. About half the lines in here are people saying evil dies tonight.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So Tommy goes around recruiting people for his mob, and he's like, we're gonna go murder a guy. Do you want to come with? And people are like, yeah, okay.
Oh, being easily convinced to do murder is tight.
It is. So all these people, they're gonna be like, evil dies tonight.
Right.
So Tommy gets pretty much the whole town together because he's like, there's strength in numbers.
Smart.
So now that they have the numbers, they all split up into little easy to kill groups.
Smart.
And at the hospital, Lori's granddaughter Allison is like, I'm gonna go join a mob and find Michael and kill him because evil dies tonight.
Okay.
But her mom Karen is like, no, Allison, Michael's definitely on his way to the hospital to kill Lori. So for you to be safe, you should stay in the hospital.
Oh, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'm just kind of filling time between kills. I'm hoping nobody pays attention to this stuff.
Oh, fingers crossed.
So then for most of the movie, we're gonna kind of meet characters for a little bit, and then they're gonna die horrible deaths.
Wait, so who's the protagonist in this thing?
Pass.
That's fine.
And so then eventually the mob finds out that one of the escape patients is in the hospital, so they're like, oh my, that's gotta be Michael. We gotta kill him.
Is it Michael?
No, it's not. It's this short little balding guy running around screaming, help me, please help me.
So they realize that's not the 7-foot tall man whose face they just saw on TV.
No, they're still pretty convinced it's him.
Oh.
So the mob chases this guy down, and he gets so scared he jumps off the hospital and dies.
Oh my god.
And so meanwhile, the real Michael Myers goes back to his childhood home, and there's this couple living there, Big John and Little John.
Uh-oh.
So one of them sees a bloody handprint on the wall next to their open back door, so they're like, oh my god, somebody's in the house.
So they call the cops?
Well, no, they close the door and split up and start checking rooms separately.
Also a decent strategy.
Yeah, you'd think that would work, but it doesn't, and they both die.
Oh.
And then this guy Lonnie and his son and also Allison, they figure out that this is where Michael went, so they head over there.
They don't alert the rest of the mob or the police.
Nope, they head over alone.
Nothing wrong with that.
So then they get there, and Lonnie's like, you two need to stay safe, so I'm gonna go in alone.
Smart as well, sure.
So he goes into the house and immediately screams, so his son and Allison, they go in as well.
Oh, immediately disregarding the strategy.
That's the idea. So then Michael kills the guy.
Well, there was no way to see that coming.
Agreed. And then he's about to kill Allison, but Karen pops out and stabs him in the back with a pitchfork and stomps on his head while he's down.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's badass.
So does she stab him another couple times, make sure he's dead?
No. She walks out onto the street and she's like, hey Michael, if you want to kill someone tonight, kill me.
But she has him stabbed and on the floor.
Yeah, so she uses that opportunity to lure him outside.
Well, okay then.
So then he gets up and follows her outside and the whole mob is waiting for him.
Oh.
And the mob is like, evil dies tonight.
That does sound like them.
And they're all geared up with weapons.
What kind of weapons are we talking?
We're talking hockey stick, baseball bat, couple knives, brass knuckles.
Nope, don't people have guns?
Well, a couple, but not really, you know. This is small town America. They don't really have guns. Anyway, so now it's Michael versus a big mob of people.
Oh man, it's gonna be impossible for him to beat those numbers. Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really? Yeah, see, they shoot and stab him in a couple of non-lethal areas, and then they're like, hey, we did it, gang. He's dead for sure.
Nobody goes for a headshot?
They don't, no. So then Michael gets up.
How, though? I mean, even with crappy weapons, they should have enough people to take him down.
Well, see, they do like the firefighters, and they attack one at a time, and those who do have guns try to fire them within grabbing range.
Oh, these people are terrible at staying alive.
They are. So then Karen goes inside Michael's house and looks out the window, and then he pops out and kills her.
Aren't there any police around?
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of cops, but Michael sneaks around them off screen, which means I don't need to explain how that happened.
Oh, is that how writing works?
It is.
Neat.
And then we're also gonna say that with every kill, Michael gets more powerful.
So he's like supernatural?
Maybe, I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, and also we're gonna say that Michael never actually cared about Laurie Strode. He just wanted to go home.
Oh. All right.
So then in the next movie, Halloween Ends, we're gonna have the big showdown between Laurie and Michael.
And you just said he doesn't really give a crap about her at all?
That's right.
So that's the stage you've set for yourself.
Exactly. We're gonna keep it focused on that epic showdown in which one of the parties doesn't really care.
Sure, you gotta keep it focused.
Yeah, but then also just kind of throw a bunch of other gimmicks in there too, I think.
Well, sure. So, you have a Halloween reboot slash sequel for me?
Oh, God, I think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure what this is anymore, but you got that new Halloween movie for me?
Oh, yeah, yes, sir, I do.
Amazing.
So this one's gonna take place 4 years after the events of the last movie, right?
Oh, yeah, and what's going on with Laurie Strode?
You know, she's just kind of doing her best to live a normal suburban life, you know, just taking it easy.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I wrote here. Why, what's up?
It's just like 2 movies ago, we said she had spent like 40 years training and being paranoid just in case Michael Myers ever escaped from the asylum he was in.
Right.
And now Michael Myers has killed her daughter and is on the loose, and she's just chilling.
Yeah, no, she's chilling.
Oh, okay, cool.
So anyway, we're gonna meet this weird 24-year-old dude named Corey, right?
Hey, what's his deal?
Well, his deal is that the movie's about him now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
What about Michael Myers and Laurie Strode?
Not so much, no.
Isn't that what people would want to see, though?
Who's to say?
I mean, probably everybody.
Okay, well, look, we could focus the marketing on Laurie Strode versus Michael Myers, but I think in terms of the actual movie, we're gonna really want to focus on this Corey guy.
If you say so. So what's going on with Corey, was it?
Corey, yeah. And so 3 years ago, he accidentally killed the kid he was babysitting, and the whole town hates him now. Like, he gets bullied by some high school kids.
Like big football jocks.
Oh, worse. Marching band.
What?
Yeah, these little marching band kids are real mean to Corey, and one day while they're bullying him, he hurts his hand.
Uh-oh.
And so Lori brings him to this doctor office where her daughter Allison is now a nurse, and she's like, hey, maybe you date my daughter now.
What?
And Allison sees this dude, and she's like, Oh, I am very much into this weird guy who killed a child and gets bullied by teenage marching band geeks.
Well, you know, that is pretty hot.
Yeah, it is. So they're deeply in love now.
Yeah, no, I get it.
But then Corey's gonna get bullied by the marching band again.
God, these tiny musicians will not leave this guy alone.
I know, and this time they push him off a little bridge, and while he's unconscious, he gets dragged into a sewer by Michael Myers.
He's the guy this is supposed to be about.
He is, except it's very much about Corey.
So what's going on with Michael Myers? I mean, at the end of the last movie, we said he was like the embodiment of evil, and he took out a whole entire armed mob by himself.
Oh, yeah, well, I forgot about all that. So now he's very weak, and he's been living in a sewer for 4 years.
Oh.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully people won't really remember how the last movie ended.
This is a direct sequel to it.
It is, yeah, and so he killed a bunch of people and then suddenly became kind of a geriatric Pennywise the Clown, just an arthritic old man occasionally killing people in a sewer.
I guess that's a scary horror movie bad guy.
It might be. So anyway, he grabs Corey and he doesn't actually kill him, but they lock eyes.
Are they gonna kiss?
They're not gonna kiss, know, but it seems like Michael maybe sees the same darkness inside Corey that he has inside himself. There's something going on with the eyes.
Is it supernatural? Who knows?
You?
Nope. And so then Corey leaves the sewer and immediately kills a homeless guy.
Oh my God.
And then he goes to see Allison and he's like, I just killed a guy. Like, I just murdered a dude.
Yeesh. How does he react?
She doesn't really. So they keep on dating.
Oh, okay.
And then Corey's gonna bring this cop that used to date Allison into the sewer and kind of kill him with Michael.
Oh boy, here we go. Michael Myers is back, maybe.
Yeah.
And also Corey. Mostly Corey.
I don't know who that is.
Then they're gonna kill another couple of people together, and Corey's gonna be kind of consumed by the darkness and want to go on a killing spree.
Uh-oh.
But first he wants Michael's iconic mask.
Well, it's gonna be impossible to get Michael Myers' mask off of him.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he just heads to the sewer and beats the crap out of him and takes it from him.
This kid that was beaten up by some marching band kids beats the crap out of Michael Myers.
Yeah, just whoops his little psychopath butt and steals his mask and runs away.
All right.
So then he goes on a killing spree, but when he gets to Lori, she shoots him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's not actually dead yet, and he tells her, if I can't have your daughter, no one can. And then he cuts his own neck.
But if he's dead, doesn't that mean anyone except him can have her now?
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
Whoopsie.
Anyway, now it's time for the final act of the movie.
So the guy we've spent the entire movie following doesn't make it into the final act.
Correct, because now it's time for the big showdown this has all been leading up to. Mostly in the background, I guess.
Which is?
This old, weak sewer guy who was just beat up by a guy who was bullied by band geeks versus a grandmother.
Right.
And so then they fight, and the grandmother wins.
Oh, violent grandmas are tight.
Yeah, they are.
And so then the whole town comes together and parades through the streets with Michael's dead body.
How did everybody find out? Did Lori send out a group text?
Probably a group text situation, yeah. So then they throw his body into this grinder thing, which, you know, grinds it.
Gross. And so that's it? He's dead?
He's dead, sir. And then we see Lori writing a book about the whole experience, and she's like, there will be no grave, no memorial. The memory of him will fade.
The memory of him will fade. Wow.
Wait, she wrote that in a book?
Yes.
Okay.
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Well, listen, as long as we got the iconic mask and knife and the marketing material, this is gonna make money.
So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called The Ring.
Oh, movies about rings are super hot right now. Does it have hobbits in it?
No, it doesn't. It's an adaptation of a Japanese film called Ringu.
Oh, okay, so does it have, hobbitos in it?
It doesn't, no. This is a spooky movie about a videotape that if you watch it, you die 7 days later.
Oh, very spooky. So what happens in the movie?
Well, at the beginning of the movie, we're gonna meet this high school girl who actually watched the tape 7 days earlier.
Uh-oh, sounds like trouble.
Yeah, and so she walks into a room and sees something, and instantly her face turns all gray and deceased and screamy.
So it was trouble, I was right.
Yeah, and later at her wake, we're gonna get a spooky flash of what she looked like when they found her in the closet.
What? How did she get in the closet?
I don't know.
Fair enough. So what does she look like?
Well, she looks like she died, but also kinda like someone just got her the most thoughtful gift.
Oh, how very sweet.
Yeah, so then after, we're gonna meet this creepy little kid who's the cousin of that girl, right?
Oh, creepy, huh? Like in the Sixth Sense?
No, not at all like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, this is just a creepy kid. He makes creepy drawings, he communicates with the dead, and while he's at a young girl's wake, he wanders into her room and pokes around.
That sounds like the kid in the Sixth Sense, though.
Oh, like the kid in Sixth Sense. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Bruce Willis.
Oh, whoops.
Whoopsie.
So what happens at this wake?
Well, the mom of the dead girl asks the main character, Rachel, to look into this, because she thinks it's weird that her 16-year-old's heart just stopped.
Right, that is a little suspicious. And also she was gray.
So Rachel goes to this cabin where the girl and her friends watch the tape and watches it herself.
And what's on the tape?
A bunch of vaguely creepy images that look like a first year film student's attempt at being edgy.
Oh, pretentious artist ghosts are tight.
Yeah, so after she watches the tape, a phone rings, and when she answers, all she hears is 7 days.
Okay, very ominous.
So now Rachel has to find a video expert to figure out what's going on with this weird supernatural videotape.
Man, it's gonna be tough to find a video expert willing to help with a weird request like that.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yes, your ex-boyfriend and baby daddy Noah happens to be a video expert.
Oh, that is convenient.
It is. So then he comes over to her place and watches the tape. She lets him watch the tape she suspects makes people die.
She does. Very inconsiderate.
Yeah, and so after he leaves her place, she notices there's a voicemail.
Oh, what does it say?
Well, she deletes it without listening.
What? Isn't she actively investigating this thing? Why would she delete that?
Because what if it's spooky?
Oh, I didn't consider that it might be spooky. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So what happens if you watch the tape and you're nowhere near a phone?
Oh, unclear.
Huh, okay.
So anyway, she makes a copy of the tape and her and Noah start really looking into this.
How did they do that?
Well, luckily the ghost girl left behind enough clues to fill up 2.5 hours of runtime.
Oh, well, great.
And so Rachel's gonna go visit her niece's friend who's now in a mental hospital because she was there the night she died.
And how does that go?
Well, this girl's all messed up now, but when her and Rachel touch, she's like, oh, you have 4 days left to live.
What? So this girl now has videotape detection powers because she was in the house?
I guess so. And then Noah really starts to believe because he sees that his face is all smudged up in pictures and videos.
And what's that about?
It's part of it. I don't know. It's just part of it.
Okay, if you say so.
Also, Rachel's creepy son watches the tape.
Oh no, how did he get his hands on it?
Well, Rachel just left it lying around at home.
An extremely reckless mother.
Kind of. And so then we're gonna have Rachel do just a bunch of reading about this family called the Morgans, whose daughter is the ghost girl.
Watching people read does make for good cinema.
It sure does. So she's gonna go to their horse farm and try to get to the bottom of this.
And how does that go?
Oh, not well. Rachel watches this tape of the ghost girl, Samara, and then her dad appears out of nowhere and hits Rachel over the head.
Oh, geez, she's in trouble now.
Actually, no, because he walks right upstairs and electrocutes himself in just the most over-the-top way. If he was headed upstairs to electrocute himself, why bother bonking her on the head?
I don't know. He felt like bonking her on the head.
Well, okay then. And Rachel's gonna talk to her creepy son on the phone, and it turns out that the ghost girl's just been straight up communicating with them.
Oh, she has?
Yeah, she's showing him things like that she lived in a barn and now she lives in the dark place.
Wow, so Rachel must really drill him with questions, huh? Ask him every single thing he learned from the ghost girl?
No, she hangs up pretty quickly. I think she wants to do this on her own.
Oh, okay, strange strategy.
So then eventually Rachel and Noah are gonna find this well that's like 100 feet deep.
Wow.
And as they're investigating it, all these nails and screws start raising by themselves, and then Rachel gets hit in the head with a TV.
What?
Yeah, the ghost girl smacks her with a TV and she falls down the well.
Wow, so she dies?
Somehow she doesn't, but she finds the ghost girl's body and they give her a proper burial.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it seems like a nice ending, but then when she tells her creepy son about it, he's like, you helped her? You're not supposed to help her.
Uh-oh, creepy boy knows something.
Uh-oh is right. So then Samara comes out of Noah's TV.
Oh, so he dies instantly like the girl at the beginning?
No, for some reason she's really gonna take her time on this one and walk super slowly.
Up to her, I guess.
So what would have happened if Noah had been standing next to a jumbotron or like in Times Square? Well, I do have a Samara versus Godzilla script I could pitch ya.
Hey, nope, that sounds awful.
You're lost, sir.
So how come Rachel wasn't killed if it turns out this girl actually was evil?
Well, she realized that because she made a copy of the tape, the curse was lifted off of her.
Didn't she make that copy towards the beginning of the movie?
Pretty early on, yeah.
So if that's what lifted the curse, why did supernatural stuff happen to her the whole time?
So the movie can happen.
Well, okay then.
And so then she has her creepy son make a copy of the tape, and then we're gonna insinuate that everyone in the audience is gonna die a week after watching this movie.
Very creepy and slightly threatening.
So what do you think?
Well, it sounds like a real spook fest.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, and if it works, then we could just remake all the scary Japanese movies.
All of them?
All of them. So you have a spooky movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's gonna be based off that scary nun from The Conjuring 2.
Oh, nuns are tight.
Oh my god, what?
Oh, I'm so sorry. That sounded awful.
It really did.
Let's just act like that didn't happen, okay?
It did, though. So anyway, the movie takes place in Romania in 1952.
Okay.
And the Vatican sends this exorcist, Father Burke, and this aspiring nun, Sister Irene, to go investigate the suicide of a nun at this abbey.
Oh, there's more than one nun in the movie?
Oh yeah, we've got all kinds of nuns. Aspiring nuns, frozen nuns, possessed nuns, demon nuns, ghost nuns.
Wow, just shoving a whole lot of nuns in there.
Yeah, I was inspired by that Will Smith song that's all about nuns.
What are you talking about?
You know that song of his where it's like, nun, 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 nun.
That's not what that song's about.
Well,
so anyway, what actually happens in the movie?
Well, Sister Irene and Father Burke meet up with this guy, Frenchie, who's actually the one who found the body of the nun who killed herself.
Frenchie, huh? What's his deal?
Oh, he's awesome. He cracks jokes all the time.
Seems like that's gonna feel a little out of place in a movie like
this.
Oh yeah, super out of place. He's gonna have a bunch of one-liners like he's in a Marvel movie or something.
Oh, Marvel movies make a ton of money, so I'm definitely on board now.
Anyway, so Frenchie brings Father Burke and Sister Irene to this abbey because they need to see if it's still holy or not.
Right.
And this obviously evil shadow nun appears out of nowhere and she's like, you guys are gonna have to stay the night. Ha ha ha, wink wink.
Oh, what do they say to the obviously evil shadow nun?
They're like, okay, sounds good, lady, thanks so much.
I bet a bunch of spooky stuff is gonna happen overnight.
A bunch of spooky stuff is gonna happen overnight.
I knew it.
Yeah, Father Burke's gonna hear some scary noises in the night, so he's gonna start walking around in the dark trying to find what the source is.
Oh, we're doing that whole thing, huh?
Yeah, basically the only reason characters ever walk around in this movie is because they heard something horrifying and they go check it out alone.
That is the only logical thing to do when you hear something horrifying.
So yeah, Father Burke walks around the grounds following a little demon boy and then he gets spooked into an open coffin.
Very spooky.
Yeah, and then the nun uses magic or something to completely cover it with dirt.
Oh wow, so she's like super powerful.
Yeah, she even makes a little tombstone with his name on it.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it says, here lies Father Burke.
Why would she make that though? Like, who's that for?
It's for us.
Okay, gotcha. So is he gonna be able to get out of the coffin?
Oh yeah, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the nun was nice enough to include a little bell he can ring to let people know he's in there.
Oh wow, what a sweetheart.
Yeah, so he rings the little bell and Sister Irene hears it from hundreds of feet away and comes to save him.
Wow, so I imagine they go back and report everything to the Vatican?
Well, no, they still need to figure out if this place is unholy.
Did getting buried alive by an evil nun not settle that?
No, that wasn't enough.
Oh.
So then they're gonna kinda split up and do their own thing until the movie's climax.
Personal space is important, I guess.
And Irene's gonna hang out with some ghost nuns or something, and they're gonna tell her all about the evil demon named Valak.
Wow.
Yeah, we're gonna have this flashback to medieval times when the gates of hell are opening up and a bunch of knights storm in and they have to close it up with the blood of Jesus Christ.
Wow, that actually sounds like a really good movie.
I know, right?
Sounds like you should have written a movie about that instead of this story.
Whoops.
Whoopsie.
Anyway, we're also gonna learn that Valak takes the form of a nun so it can walk around the abbey undetected.
But wait, then why is she still a nun in The Conjuring 2?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so then we're just gonna sprinkle in a bunch of spooky moments and jump scares.
Oh, what kind of stuff are we talking here?
Oh, well, one of the big moves we're gonna pull is a thing where the camera slowly pans away from a character, right?
Yeah.
And when the camera pans back, there's gonna be something there that wasn't there before.
Oh my god, that's so good. That's so horrifying.
Right? People are gonna be like, that thing wasn't there before.
Incredible.
Oh, and also we'll have like a loud noise when you realize that the thing is there.
Wow.
So yeah, we're gonna pull that trick about 20 to 30 times.
That sounds like a lot. Do you think it's gonna get more and more predictable every time we do it?
Well, we are gonna mix it up a bit.
Oh, we are?
Yeah, sometimes instead of having the camera pan from left to right, it's gonna tilt from up to down.
Oh, that's gonna keep it really exciting.
Right? It's gonna be like, which way's the camera gonna slowly turn?
We don't know.
Yeah, and they say the scariest thing is the unknown, so I think we should go all in on the scare tactic.
Agreed, that sounds like a good strategy.
So then we're gonna have this big finale where the main characters go into the catacombs, which is where the door to hell is.
Gonna be important for them to stick together in there, I imagine.
Yeah, you'd think so, but they split up immediately.
Oh.
Yeah, that way we can cram different types of jump scares in there.
Very smart.
And then Sister Irene is gonna end up in this pool thing and get possessed by the nun.
Oh no.
Yeah, but then Frenchie's gonna save her by putting the blood of Jesus on her face.
Oh good.
But what we don't know is that at the same time, the nun kinda possessed Frenchie.
Oh no.
And then the nun is gonna start to drown Irene.
Oh no.
But then she's gonna spit Jesus' blood in her face.
Oh good.
But then she's gonna start to drown again.
Oh no.
But then Frenchie's gonna save her by giving her mouth to mouth.
Wait, if the nun is also possessing Frenchie, how's he able to give her mouth to mouth?
What do you mean?
Well, she just had the blood of Jesus in her mouth. You'd imagine she still has some in there.
Oh yeah, well somehow it's gonna be fine though.
Oh, well great.
And so yeah, that's about it.
Well, it sounds awesome, and I actually know the perfect actress to play Sister Irene.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, Thaisa Farmiga.
You mean the younger sister of Vera Farmiga who looks exactly like her?
Right, that's the one.
But Vera is the main actress in the Conjuring movies.
What's your point?
I mean, I don't have anything in this script about their characters being related or being the same person or anything.
Oh, you think people are gonna expect a reason as to why we cast the main actress's younger sister who looks exactly like her to play in the same movie series?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really good point. I guess that's super confusing, but let's do it anyway, okay?
If you say so.
I do.
So do you think the movie's gonna do well?
I mean, we're definitely kinda stretching it with spin-offs of sequels, but also maybe people will just go see anything if it's in the Conjuring universe.
Let's hope so.
So, you got a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. So what if a pool was haunted?
Well, I would simply not swim in it.
Don't say that. That undoes the whole premise.
Oh, my bad.
So yeah, what if a pool was haunted?
I don't know what I would do.
Exactly. So this is actually based on a 3-minute short film called Night Swim.
3 minutes, huh? Do you think that might have been the proper length for a movie about a haunted pool?
Eh, we're gonna pad the runtime quite a bit. Should be fine.
Oh, padding things to make them seem more substantial is tight.
Yeah, so the movie starts in 1992 with a little girl being pulled underwater by a pool ghost. A ghost of the pool, if you will.
Oh boy, here we go. Let's get it started with the fun, campy horror.
Fun and campy? No, 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 no. This haunted pool movie takes itself very seriously, sir.
Oh!
The haunted pool movie.
Yes. Well, okay then.
So then in present day, we're gonna meet the Waller family who buys the house that has said pool.
And what's their deal?
Well, the father, Ray, was a Major League Baseball player for years and years, but now he's been forced to retire because of an illness.
Oh, dang it.
And he realizes that now that he started swimming in this pool, he's starting to heal. But the pool also does spooky stuff sometimes.
Oh yeah, what kind of spooky pool stuff does the spooky pool do?
Well, it freaking kills the family cat.
Okay, that thing that happens in every horror movie where a family moves into a haunted house.
Yeah, but because this is a pool instead of a house, it's slightly different and we can do stuff like that.
That is slightly different.
And the whole family's gonna start having spooky little moments, like the son Elliot's gonna be swimming by himself. He's gonna have a freaking jump scare.
They just let a child swim alone unsupervised?
Sure, okay. And the older daughter's gonna have a spooky moment playing Marco Polo with a boy she likes. She starts getting real terrified because he's not answering her Marcos and the lights are flickering.
So she opens her eyes.
Oh, that's the thing. She can't.
Oh, because the pool spirits forcing them shut or something?
No, because that would go against the rules of Marco Polo.
Oh no.
So eventually everybody's had a spooky experience with this pool and the dad's addicted to it, saying it's the best thing that's ever happened to him.
So what are they gonna do? Move out?
Host a pool party.
That works too, yeah.
But during that pool party, the dad gets possessed by the pool ghost and almost drowns a kid.
Yikes.
So this haunted pool's not actually killing anybody during this movie, is it? Well, no, because if someone died, then logically they'd stop going into the pool and I'd have to end the movie. So the pool's just doing spooky stuff mostly.
Wow, it's almost like this should just be a short film.
And so then the mom does that horror movie thing where she researches the previous owners of the house.
But since it's about a pool, it's slightly different.
Exactly. So she goes to visit the mom of the little girl who died at the start of the movie and learns all the pool lore.
And so what's the story behind this friggin' thing of water?
Well, it turns out the water in the pool comes from a healing spring underneath it, and it grants wishes.
Okay.
But to grant the wish, somebody has to be sacrificed. Like, that lady sacrificed her daughter so that her sick son could get better.
Okay, so since the dad is healing, the pool's gonna kill one of the kids?
Yeah, it wants to kill his son.
So why didn't the pool just do that time the kid was swimming alone?
So anyway, now the mom's gotta rush home to save her kid.
Yeah, she does.
And at this point, the dad is fully possessed by the pool, so he's running around chasing the daughter, being all scary.
Why is he chasing the daughter if the pool wants the son?
Unclear, and he's running around like, Marco! And then he's gonna pop out later and be like, you're supposed to say Polo, all scary-like.
The pool ghost cracks jokes now?
It does crack jokes now, yes. And then the son gets dragged into the pool, which is now super deep because of magic.
Uh-oh.
So then the mom dives into the pool to try to find the son, but she's smart and leaves a hose for herself, which lets her get an extra breath of air before diving deeper because she was already running out of oxygen.
So wouldn't that mean the sun is like definitely out of air?
So anyway, she finds him, and then she gets him to the surface, but all these pool ghosts are popping out, making scary faces at them.
The ghosts aren't actually doing anything, though?
No, so now they gotta go deal with the possessed dad. The pool's still possessing him.
Is that gonna be hard to do? I mean, they don't know a thing about ghost powers.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, the daughter whacks him with a baseball bat, and he spits out the possession.
Oh, great.
But now the dad's like, the pool still needs a sacrifice, so I'm gonna go drown myself.
The sacrifice for healing himself? Is him dying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't he just go back to being sick or something?
That's not in the terms and conditions of the spooky haunted pool. No, he can't do that.
Oh, okay.
So then to end the movie, the surviving family members fill the pool in with dirt, because water can't get through dirt.
Mud. It's fine.
And then they're gonna be like, well, we shouldn't move, because then another family's just gonna move in here and get cursed, and dad wouldn't have wanted that.
Wouldn't it be kind of suspicious to the police that right after the dad goes missing, they fill in their pool?
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Hey, I mean, let's drop this bad boy in January, see what happens.
Wait, isn't that kind of the dead month for movie theaters?
Is it?
Hi everybody, it's Ryan George here. Thanks for watching that pitch meeting. I hope you liked it. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel and email this video to your grandparents. You might want to call them on the phone to make sure that they received it. Some older people have trouble with technology. It's not really their fault. Just call them if you can.
All right, I'll see you next time.